Reiner Schog from TSN joins us. Schogger, how you doing?
Doing well today, boys. How are you?
I'm doing good. Very good. Taylor Hall has been struggling, so he is changing his stick, you have unearthed.
Yeah. Jim Matheson and I were grilling him a little today, and I mean, he's had nothing but stick snapping all over the place the last couple of weeks here. I think, I don't know how many, but like he said, a lot. And so I don't think Taylor's in any way blaming the offensive struggles on sticks breaking, but I think it's just one of those things where, I don't know, Matt, seems to me like you want to be able to rely on your equipment, and it's sort of getting into his head maybe a little bit if it keeps happening over and over and over again. So you make a switch, just maybe one, to just try and throw a wrench into things and change things up a little bit, but two, to maybe try and, you know, not have to worry about it. Like, does it get into your head if your stick snapping all the time? That ever happen to you?
I never played that many minutes, right? I was, you know, if my sticks were snapping all the time, it's because I was hitting them over the bench or something. But I do think, and I do see with guys that maybe break them more often. And sometimes it's even a batch of sticks, because you have to know they make them in batches, correct? So if you get like, usually they order them, say, a dozen or two dozen sticks at a time. If you get a dozen sticks and there's an internal structural flaw that maybe you can't see, that they just break more often than you know, that can be an issue. So I think it's just, you know, you're trying to change something up. You've been struggling. Your sticks have been breaking. You're not blaming it on that. But at the same time, you're trying to do anything to spark yourself to you know, not have your brain in that place where you even think of, like, oh, maybe it's my stick's fault. Maybe there's something with the kick point in it and something's off and it doesn't feel right. And you're just trying to eliminate anything that can bring you down, basically. And I think that's more what it's about than anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, and he's kind of in that mode now where, I mean, he's got, what, no goals in his last 10, two in his last 17. The other thing about him too, guys, is that, I mean, you can tell post-game against Toronto, that clip from Todd McClellan, I mean, Todd was frustrated about the way they'd played and frustrated about things kind of in the defensive zone with that line as well. And so it wasn't just in talking to the media that he expressed that frustration. I mean, you look at Taylor Hall's ice time the last bunch of games here. I think in five of his last seven games, he's been under 17 minutes. Now, granted, McDavid is back in the lineup, and he's going to take some of those minutes, but it's not like Connor's been playing a mountain of minutes himself, right? But Taylor's minutes have been down. I mean, he was 19:48 last game, but he played better. Before that, he was 14 against Toronto. Two games previous to that, he was under 17, 14:52, 15:46, 13:33. I mean, my goodness. This is a player who should play 20 minutes a night. He's a world-class player who should play 20 minutes a night, and that maybe opens a little bit of a window into the frustration level of his head coach with where the overall game has been at lately.
Yeah, you look at those minutes in a few of those games, like McDavid was playing 13 as well, because A, they were blowouts,
yeah.
And B, though, the Oilers had, there was two games where they were penalty killing for 10 minutes in the game, and so, you know, Hall doesn't penalty kill, right? So,
yeah.
In all those games, he was, I think he was second in even strength minutes amongst forwards, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of it was, because I looked at that number too and was like, wow, but then I dug into it more in the 5-on-5 and I was like, okay, he doesn't penalty kill. And it happened that the McDavid power play unit was the one that was scoring. And I think the Hall one game, his line had 31 seconds of power play because McDavid played the first full 2 minutes. Remember that power play against Columbus?
Oh, yeah.
And then they scored on the next one where they started it. So it really didn't get much power play time either.
Yeah, and sure, you can probably explain some of it away along those lines, and I think that's a fair point for you to make, but still, I mean, you're always killing penalties. You're always having multiple power play units, and if Taylor were playing better, maybe that unit would be starting more often. I mean, there's things you can control. I don't think there's no correlation between a drop-off in his play and a drop-off in minutes. I think you can explain some of it away, but I think there's also something to you know, the fact that the coach is spreading it around a little bit and has expressed a certain amount of displeasure over what they've done in their own end. And so McClellan met with Hall yesterday. They talked for a little while about his game. You know, I think Taylor understands what the minimum expectation is. Look, if you're not going to be scoring and putting up points, then this is the minimum expectation level. We need you to be doing at least this. And I think getting away from the frustration, the slamming sticks and screaming at referees, and getting back to that minimum level of expectation defensively, getting on the right side of things, you know, in a couple of different ways and riding this thing out. And like Taylor said, I mean, all it's going to take is one really good period where they have a great period, a few good looks, somebody bangs one in. Confidence is a funny thing, especially with a young player like Draisaitl. So, you know, Taylor's been fantastic this year. Yes, he's gone into a little bit of a slump here, but I think once it gets going for him, I think it'll probably pick right back up.
Well, all he has to do is look across the ice to Ryan Getzlaf as a prime example of elite scorer. Sidney Crosby, the same, who went into, you know, below average production in a sense, as far as like, and the thing about Taylor Hall as well, yes, he hasn't scored goals. At least he's, you know, I think he's got 6 points in 9 games. So at least he's finding a way to get something, but obviously you need him to be scoring goals. Right. And I think, and the one thing, the message it should send though to the rest of the team is, hey, even our best goal scorer, if he's not scoring, I'm going to cut his ice time.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And look, you're going to go with the guys who are getting the minutes. Like, look, I've been watching this power play. And they, when they can, they start out that McDavid power play unit. Todd generally likes to, especially when he's got two units, to give that first unit a look, but then switch it up and then try and get that first unit another look towards the tail end of it. Now, a lot of things depend on how much possession time they have in the offensive zone. But what Todd is doing is he's leaving that unit out, that first unit out there. So if they get in, set up, and a puck goes over the glass, he'll leave that unit out there instead of making the quick switch and getting the other group out there. He's sensing, he's trying to be opportunistic with Connor and give him the offensive opportunities. And that is coming at the expense at times of Taylor Hall and of that second unit power play for sure. And so, you know, there's going to be some little subtle frustrations where that line, you know, maybe they come back with that line out of commercial breaks. Maybe they, and we haven't seen McDavid play ridiculous minutes, but it's offensive opportunities that all year long get funneled to Taylor because he's the premier offensive weapon. Well, now it's a shared thing, and Connor is starting to get some of those longer power play shifts and some of those double shifting out of a commercial break. He's starting to get some of the benefits of those things, and it's Taylor's going to have to work his way back into those opportunities and create with the ice time Todd can give him.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Ryan, sounds like it's Korpikoski or Cassian, just doing a little sleuthing around the room, looking who was in and who was on the ice and who wasn't there as far as Lander coming back in. Korpikoski has not been good, so it wouldn't be a big blow to put Lander in the middle on the fourth line with Hendricks and Pakarinen or however it works out. Cassian with Letestu and Yakupov, they did switch up the Hall line for a bit, albeit not very long, which, you know, I understand why. Give me your thoughts on, like, we've seen Nail Yakupov, you know, go through slumps before, but I'm not sure I've seen him look more ineffective or frustrated than I have in the last 10 games.
Yeah, no, he's been, his game is completely gone. I mean, he's having trouble getting anything done out there. He's having trouble just getting the simplest things done in an effective fashion. It's really far gone here, and it's kind of, what are we, 2, 4, 6, or 8 or 9 games here without a point. He's not getting a lot done. He's gone back to that jitterbug game where he's bouncing all over the place, where he's, you know, kind of just slapping that puck around and overhandling it and kind of making difficult plays, you know. Anyway, if he gets a little power play time, suddenly he's going to do it himself. It's his game is really far gone right now. And I don't know what the fix is. We've sat and watched this player for a number of years now. And, you know, I've had a healthy amount of criticism for his game, you know, since he got here. And some of the criticisms I had, there haven't really been those improvements. The best hockey we've ever seen him play was with Connor McDavid, but Connor's going to make a lot of players look pretty fantastic. So he hasn't earned that opportunity. Look, if the Oilers want to move this player, they probably need to put him back with Connor, give him 10 or 15 games playing with McDavid. They don't have that much time before the deadline, but give him a little bit of time here with him to try and get some offensive numbers going and try and move him. But this is as bad as I've ever seen it, and I honestly don't know what the fix is.
Yeah, I don't know either, Ryan, because it's in all facets of his game now. Like, at least Yakupov before, you know, when he wasn't necessarily scoring, you'd still see him have a few plays a game where you're, okay, you know, he's generating something, and he's really just being reduced to perimeter shots.
Yeah, no, he has. And I mean, I don't know. I can't get into his head and speculate as to what he might be thinking. Can't speculate into, you know, what he might be feeling. I would venture a guess that, you know, when Connor got hurt and his game fell off so dramatically, and then he got hurt, and then when Connor came back and Nail wasn't giving him the spot next to him, there was probably some frustration in that for him. And the offense isn't coming. He's not able to generate on his own. Nugent Hopkins has been hurt, so this idea of three offensive lines is completely out the window. You know, Cassian has come along, another right winger added to the mix, and that's just eating into Nail's time. Yeah, I think there's some things that have probably got him questioning his place in the world, and the only thing that fixes that is more effort and better production. And I'm not going to say Nail doesn't try hard, but there are times where the frustration definitely shines through, and you see him pulling up on some back checks where he just put his nose down and kept going. He might buy himself some karma.
Lastly, Justin Schultz, do you think he gets traded before the 29th?
Yeah, I'm going to say I think he does. You know, and I know there's this sense out there that they'll get nothing for him or next to nothing for him. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think, I don't know who, but I think somebody would probably give up something for him. And maybe it's a player who, you know, maybe it's a player who's already been drafted, somebody in their system, a prospect of some sort. But yeah, I do think they'll make a deal. I think they're going to explore the situation with Eric Greiba, try and get a sense for what it takes to re-sign that player, figure out if a deal can get done. And if a deal can get done, I think they do it. And I think that they move Schultz. I think they move Purcell. Maybe one other deal that we don't see coming, but it wouldn't surprise me if Schultz moved and Greiba had a deal.
Yeah, well, Eric Greiba, man, to me, I'd re-sign him. What would you do?
Yeah, I would. I would because I think I know that defensemen are valuable around deadline time and teams are willing to give up picks for him, but I mean, what are they going to get in a trade for Eric Greiba? Is it going to be a second-round pick, third-round pick? Something like that, if that. So, yeah, I would re-sign him. I think he's a couple of factors come into play. One, he's got an element of physicality in his game, which they don't have enough of right there. He's big, he's strong, he's physical. He's not a perfect player, but he's a very good third-pairing defenseman. Two, he's a right shot, which they don't have enough of. And three, he's only 27 years old, turning 28 here. So, I mean, it's not like he's a 32-year-old who you're worried about if you give him a 2 or 3 year deal, what the tail end of that looks like. So, I mean, if Eric Greiba is good on a 2 or 3 year deal, I would definitely look at doing that as long as the numbers are reasonable. But I think there's some comparables that ballpark him in a range that probably is. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they explored this and got something done here. I know you reported, Jason, that nothing really has started yet, but there is still some time, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, well, I can tell you right now, Greiba would definitely like to stay in Edmonton. And honestly, the McDavid factor is a big reason. Like, everybody knows what happens when you have a generational player on your team,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, Greiba, he's a Western Canada guy. He, you know, he's from Saskatchewan. He likes it here. He's fit into a role, and he's a huge fan of Jim Johnson, his coach.
And that's, I mean, and Jimmy's got experience and yeah, I mean, that's the value of having a coaching staff with experience where, you know, they can earn that trust and earn that respect from the players. And it's just a good fit. So unless somebody comes along and offers something that the Oilers can't possibly turn down, and really they've got a couple things to think about. I mean, I don't think Schultz is in their plans moving forward. I know some people are suggesting that they'll trademark Fain, but I don't know who they're going to get to take that contract. I don't really understand where that trade comes from, unless the Oilers are retaining some salary. While he's been better recently, I still think it's a tough deal to move. So they don't have a lot on that right side, and they have very little coming on the right side. And Greiba, if he wants to be around and is serviceable and has that intangible element of being a guy who's willing to get his nose dirty a little bit, he'll stand up for his teammates, which he is. You can't have enough of that. And he's not killing them. I mean, goodness, he and Davidson have been a really good, they've essentially been their first pairing. I mean, let's be honest. The amount of minutes and responsibility those guys have been given, they're basically being used some nights like a first pairing. So, yeah, I would be trying to get them done if I were the Oilers.